You fly down that street on the chance that you'll meet and you...
Welcome back, Michael. You are listening to The Michael Dresser Show. David Harshweiger with us. He is a business strategist, a keynote speaker, and author of the national bestseller, listen to it, The Trust Edge, How Top Leaders Gain Faster Results and Deeper Relationships and a Stronger Bottom Line. His work has been featured in prominent publications such as Fast Company, Forbes, The Huffington Post, The Wall Street Journal, Success Magazine, and The Washington Post. Through his master's research experience as director of K-Life, Inc., and as a founding partner of Special Delivery Production, Dave learned firsthand how the world's most successful people gain and keep the trust of their customers and their colleagues. David, hi. Welcome to the show.
Great to be back, Michael. How are you doing?
Oh, and thank you so much for being back. You know, that word trust is a very interesting word. It seems in this society, this culture that we live in today, Dave, that we just seem to have lost that. And if we've lost it in the culture, we begin to lose it in business. And the very powerful word, the bottom line income at the end of the month, seems to dilute. So the word trust, how do we gain that within a business today, within a company?
Well, you know, two sides of the research, and one side was found a lack of trust is your biggest expense. Biggest cost you have is a lack of trust. Second part of the research was how then do we build it? And frankly, we found these eight uniquenesses that came out of the research. I call them pillars in the book because I think they hold up this advantage of being trusted. This advantage of being trusted, we call that the trust edge. But how do we build them? We build them by being clear. These eight pillars very briefly, and then I'll talk about some of the new research maybe if you want. But basically, clarity. We find that people trust the clear and they mistrust or distrust the ambiguous. Compassion. We trust those that think beyond themselves, that actually care. Don't underestimate the power of caring. I can give you the research. Character. We trust those that do what they say they do and are above reproach. Competency. I might trust you, Michael, with my kids to watch them, take them to the ball game because I know you have the character, but I might not trust you to give me a root canal because you don't have the competency of that specifically. Got to stay competent there. You want to be trusted. Commitment. I give great analogies around that. Connection. The ability to connect and collaborate with others. Contribution. We trust those that give results at the end of the day, and there's a specific way, and we give the expectations, deliver on expectations. And finally, consistency. That's why I trust McDonald's. I might not even like McDonald's, but I trust them because they give me the same burger in Frankfurt, Tokyo, and Cleveland. Whatever you do this over and over and over, I trust you, whether it's for good or bad. If you're late all the time, I trust you to be late. So these are the eight ways, these are the eight pillars that need to be a part of every thing that's trusted, whether it's the same way we build a trusted brand, a trusted leader, a trusted teacher, a trusted parent, is these eight pillars.
Now, connection is extremely important. And Dave, one of the things that I've seen over the years, that if I'm hypothetically the I in business, the I as an individual, if I'm not acknowledged, if I'm not accepted for who I am, I'm going to get turned off and I'm going to go about my own business within a business, and there's problems there. So part of that trust is allowing me to recognize something within you that I see about myself, something that's familiar to me that I can lean on.
When I can connect and collaborate, it's an interesting study out of Putnam out of Harvard. It was a very, controversial study, but a very valid study, and that showed that we trust in the most diverse communities, there was half the trust as there was in the most homogenous communities. And so we know, you and I know, we value diversity. And we want, because if we're all the same, we don't get the benefits of innovative creativity and everything else. However, it's valuable. It's worth understanding that when there's less homogeneity and there's more diversity in certain ways, there is a challenge to trust. All it is a challenge. It doesn't mean we can't. In fact, we can get the best of both worlds if we build the other pillars that build unity. For instance, let's say we have a really diverse population. I'm not just saying in color of skin or something. I'm saying in ideas, backgrounds, or whatever. How do I take that team that's all diverse and in so many ways, how do I help that team be trusted and gain the value of diversity but build trust? Well, one way is to have something in common, as you said. And so, well, I'm a farm kid, and if I find out you're a farm kid, we have something to build on. We can say, oh, you rode horses when you were growing up? I did too, and there's a little connection that happens there. But let's say we don't even have that kind of connection. We can build connections simply by, in that team, building commonalities like common values, common vision, a common outcome. There's a way of building, and if we build those first, let's say we build that team based on values, even though maybe everybody looks different, people come with different ideas and talents, we can outperform everybody else because we built a common ground to go from as far as trust is concerned. So I'll say this, one of the reasons we got reconnected with you, I think you saw we just put out the global trust trends, our annual trust trends 2014, our annual trust trends research of what's happening in the world as far as trends, and if anybody would like a copy of that, you know, it's a CEO read, it's for top level leaders, 20 page report. We're happy to give that though PDF to anybody that would like it. If they just email Ryan@davidhorsteiger.com or Ryan@thetrustedge.com. And for any of your listeners, we're happy to give that whole 20-page research report and exactly how people can leverage the trends of today, like big data and all these big trends, and be more trusted in this fast-changing world in which we live and how we apply our principles, you know, in the face of the new research.
Okay, two words that you said, operative words. One was obviously connection, which we've touched, but let's look at the other one. It's called team, T-E-A-M, team. Yep. Team is a family. You know, your mom and dad, whether they're there, they're not there, create the model of who you're going to be as an adult. If there's acceptance, there's acknowledgement, you stay with the family. I mean, that's a very important word. Because then when you go out into the world, you look for the same thing. If your family means something to you. Family does. Family also becomes the team that you deal with when you go to work someplace. That becomes the family, and that's what we migrate to, and that creates that element of trust.
No doubt about it. And this is, you know, another just this is what I plan on talking about, but just an interesting part of research I just saw, speaking of the breakdown of family and why we have so many challenges. You know, the number one thing, I was just down at the recently at the biggest prison, the death row prison, Angola, I think it is, in New Orleans, in Louisiana. And I was talking to the warden, and I was visiting, by the way.
Yeah.
The biggest penitentiary in the country.
I'm glad you qualified that.
And And you know what he said? I said, what is it that, you know, have you seen the commonalities in death row inmates? And he said, interesting. He said, the number one commonality of death row inmates, it's not color of skin, it's not they're born in the inner city or addicted to drugs or anything else. The number one commonality by far of death row inmates is no relationship or a bad relationship with their father. 98.6%, way above any other commonality. So you talk about family and those that are trying to look for family as far as our culture is concerned. And I know your show, you talked about everything, whereas I deal mostly in business and leadership issues. Here's a challenge that we have is it's not, we're trying to fix certain problems when we're not fixing the right problems. And frankly, if they just had a relationship with their dad or a positive relationship with a father figure, that's the uniqueness of a lot of breakdown of trust at the core family institution that you're talking about.
Sure. Manager, father. You know, there was a guy I talked to years ago who was a gang member. And when we really got into talking, he said the guy that would stare at him across the street that he'd start the fight with and hit wasn't the guy he was hitting. He was hitting his father. Now, fast forward that to business. You got a manager who was in the same position. He's beating up on the employees. What is he doing? He's hitting his father.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you're exactly right. Interesting how that plays out. So, and to make another analogy, I think you're also right of how you grew up. You sometimes look for a similar acceptance or something. So you have some of the, that's why, or if you don't have it and need it, you look for it. So that's, you know, it's a possibility of why people look for certain, you know, family groups in business, even to be a part of, like if they're a dysfunctional home, they might find a dysfunctional, you know, silo or business or whatnot.
So, familiarity, and it's all
or they might create that. I mean, we see that. That's another thing that happens in companies is they get poisoned. I worked with a company for 3 years, finally, after consulting, working with them for a long time, they finally decided to fire basically a board member. I said this, basically, you know, people will say, well, you compassion pillar, don't you? You never fire anybody, right? I say, absolutely not. Sometimes the most compassionate thing you can do in business is, for the sake of the whole team, is fire someone. They're poisoning, they're hurting everybody else. And in this 5,000 member organization, it dropped in half in just a few years to 2,200 people, and it was losing people. And I believe a lot of that was because of one person on one board. If you want to jump down to another pillar there, the competency pillar, basically, that says input leads to output. Well, every science says input leads to output, right? In business, we say input leads to output. First law of thermodynamics, we say the energy you put in is the energy you get out. In agriculture or in theology, they say you reap what you sow. Basic psychology says thoughts lead to desires, which lead to actions. Physiologically, eat a bad bowl of chili and watch what comes out. Input always leads to output, and that's the same on a board. If you have someone put, or on a team, or on a leader, and it's same individually. If I'm putting garbage in, garbage thoughts in, garbage, I'm listening to garbage, I'm reading garbage, I'm watching garbage, hey, it's not Dave's truth. Every science says it. Input leads to output. So if you want to be trusted, if you want to gain that pillar, the competency pillar, you got to put good stuff in to show. Because when you put good, I found out, and some people have seen me, where 2 years ago I weighed 50 pounds more. I learned that if I eat differently, eat better stuff, I have different output in my life. I learned if I put better stuff in my head, I have different output in my words and thoughts and everything else. And that pillar is built on input leads to output, and it's, you know, kind of a tie to what you were saying.
You know, all well and good. And by the way, I completely acknowledge that. I'm a 3,000% on your side of the table with that. But it's not what we don't know. It's what we don't know that we don't know. And what you just said, most people have no concept of, because they haven't been brought up that way. They haven't learned that way. My dad died when I was 8 years old. So somebody once said to me, well, you got rejected. I said, what do you mean I got rejected? My dad died. Well, the opposite of acceptance is rejection. And in my younger years, I drove three women off just to prove that I was going to get rejected. Now, you take that same scenario and you put it into business.
Yep. But I would also say it's not just what you don't know that you don't know. It's what you do know that you don't do anything about. And a lot of people know a lot and don't act on it. And the work of life is doing what's right over what's easy. And we have a new bias as far as trends are concerned, especially in our country, in America. Not sure if all your listeners are American or global, but basically there's a huge new trend toward entertainment. In fact, last year, one research changed from saying Americans had two addictions, obesity and debt, to three addictions. And the new addiction was entertainment. This is why you hear it's got to be gamified, got gamification, got to be fun. This is why my parents say, I say to my kids, and on my generation, I'm in my 40s, we say, hey kids, they go out to with friends, let's say Friday night, and parents my age say, largely across America, say, have fun. But parents, my parents never said that. My parents said, be good, be safe, be careful. Be good, young man. You got the family name. You better be good. And they cared more about us being good. And you know what? We had more fun. And so there's a change toward one of these trends of toward, instead of doing what's right, it's just have fun, have fun, have fun. And that's changing output, and it's changing trust levels, and it's changing impact, and it's changing everything. So this bias towards fun is a major problem over what's right. And if people do what's right over what's easy, they tend to have more fun. And I can talk all about that too, but anyway.
Sure. Go back to the depression. People standing in food lines. What was making money? Alcohol and entertainment. You know, we move to that. But I'm going to go back and I'm going to disagree just with one thing about that's not what you don't know. It's what you don't know. You don't want to know. It's thank God there's guys like you around, because what if I am going to be in business? Who's taught me about clarity, compassion, character, competency, etc.? So it isn't that it isn't what we know that we don't use. If you're not aware of this, how can you take that first step? So you hear
absolutely true.
Okay.
Yep.
That's where I was going with that. So
well, let me say this. Yeah. Look, when I learned exactly what was inside of a hot dog, I stopped eating so many. You know, education does. open the doors for people. Education does change behavior. When I learn how something, like I said, when I learn what's inside of a hot dog, yeah. I don't eat so many. But it's the same. When I learn about how to do something, you're right. It does change. But there's a lot of people also that know a lot about how things should be, and they don't have the self-discipline or the gumption to do anything about it, and they know what's right. They know, well, I shouldn't watch so much TV, and they're addicted, and they watch TV every night. They know they shouldn't drink so much, and they drink every night. They know they shouldn't whatever. So both are important. Knowing what to do, that if you didn't grow up in that family or didn't grow up with that background, it's critical, of course. But it's also people that just need to do the right thing. Most people agree on what's right. When I taught ethics, in graduate level ethics, I people would say, what about this relative? What about this? What about that? We disagree about what's right or wrong. 98% of the issues, people do not disagree on the dilemma, on what's right or wrong. Whatever religious background or anything else, they don't disagree about what's right or wrong. The problem is doing it.
Sure. And the best ethical example that I can possibly give you is this. Your friend says to you, I'm going to commit suicide. Don't tell my parents. So ethically, you want to stay loyal. But how are you going to not tell the parents? Because if you don't tell the parents, whoever it is going to die. You know, very interesting points. It's value judgments. But I'm going to go back to something for a moment. We're starting to run out of time. Education in and of itself is wonderful. Knowledge is wonderful. But that old thing about knowledge is power, there is the second step. The second step is the application of the knowledge. That's where you're talking about, you know, but you don't do it. There's where getting out on the street or learning about it from somebody who's been there and done that allows you to be able to move through and gain the wisdom that comes from the practical application of the knowledge that you've absorbed.
Yes. Well, that's exactly right. I agree completely. You got, good thoughts, good question. I'm passionate about this. You know, I think I think all of these things are a part of what builds trust, and trust is the single uniqueness of the greatest leaders, organizations, parents, radio talk show hosts, and governments of all time. You know, one of the fascinating things since we talked last is I had the opportunity to talk to the U.S. government, and it was, you know, I talked to them. They wanted to hear about trust, and so senators, representatives. And, everything all together right after the budget briefing and the Syria briefing. And it was fascinating. They all shake their heads, yep. And yet doing things is really difficult for them. I mean, we see such a breakdown. I think I might have said this before. I wrote an article, a blog on it that got a lot of press. And I am not a lawyer basher. I believe we need good lawyers, by the way. But when we were talking about the budget issues, it's interesting. I looked up, and there's some. I may not get this exactly right on the radio today here, but it's. I might have it exactly right, and that is there's something like 167 law degrees in the House, and 20 business degrees. There's in the Senate. There's 60 or 57 law degrees and 7 business degrees.
Yeah.
And while we need people that can make laws, we've got a competency issue on how as far as people fiscally, it was unbelievable to see what people didn't know fiscally, and they're trying to run the biggest budget that ever was, and there's some fiscal lack of competency. There's other challenges today, too. I mean, when people get these freshman senators, they come in, and the first thing they start doing is raising funds for next time instead of hanging out with each other like they used to do 20 years ago. And back to the connection pillar, like you just mentioned a bit back, they don't connect anymore off the floor. So all they have is the heats of battle, and they don't have these connection points of hey, we battled it out on the Senate floor, but now let's go have a drink or eat together and connect a little bit. And they're just more vicious than ever. And so there's a lot of reasons that trust is degrading in government, in business, and everywhere else. But there's hope, and there's a way people, individuals that can build it. There's a way companies can build it. There's a way families and brands can build it. That's the 8 pillars. Love to help I want everybody to hear about it, see it. They can get the trust edge, but also if there's anything else we can do, I know you're doing it. You're sharing these things that challenge minds and push people forward in living this way. So proud of you and grateful to just be able to be on today.
Dave, I hate to do it. We got to cut it off. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to get this podcast done. Let me ask you this website. We can find you in the book.
TheTrustEdge.com. TheTrustEdge.com.
Wonderful. Hey, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate when you're on. And go get them.
Thanks, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, Michael.